Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It's the 11th of November, 2020. Happy Veterans Day. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour. I'm going to continue playing the Molly Kay Matter from yours truly, Johnny Dollar. We're going to bookend this episode, well, this story, with a Veterans Day tribute. So this is episode 238 with an original air date of the 12th of October, 1955. Thanks for listening.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
Guess who, Johnny?
Lou. Lou Tang.
When they told me you had called, my heart jumped and beat faster. It has been a long time.
Too long. Hey, look, I want to see you, Lou.
Where are you? They only gave me a phone number.
It's a waterfront bar, foot of Drum Street, Sailor's Hangout.
Then I'll call a taxi.
No, wait there. I've got a drunk on my hands.
Well, get rid of him. Or of her.
Can't do it, honey. This is a valuable drunk. You wait. I'll get there as soon as I can. And look, will you do me a favor, Lou?
Anything you want, Johnny.
Well, there's a man named Benny Wong. I think he's been hiding out in Chinatown for the last 2 days. Can you find him for me?
So that is why you're here. The sinking of the Molly Kay.
That's right, Lou.
Too bad, Johnny. I'm sorry to hear that. Awfully sorry.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location San Francisco, to the Home Office, Marine and Maritime Casualty Limited, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Molly Kay matter. Expense account continued. Item 5, $11 even. Drinks. Consumed by one Josiah Hawkins, able-bodied seaman. Last berth, ship's carpenter on the freighter Molly Kay. And Hawkins was scared half to death. So the fear worked against the liquor, and the drinks weren't doing much good.
Who was you talking to on the phone?
A friend.
You say anything about me? About me being with you?
Nope. How about another drink, Mr. Hawkins?
I had enough. What's the name of your friend, Mr. Dollar?
Oh, you wouldn't know her. Just a girl I know here in town.
No, a girl.
Mr. Hawkins... Did Bill Mack have a girl?
Yes, he got himself engaged to a girl. I know what you're aiming at, Mr. Dollar. You're trying to play on my sympathy.
He was your friend.
That he was. One of the best.
And now he's dead. Drowned in the Pacific when the Molly Kay went down. Whoever sank her is responsible for his death. You can help me if you would.
It wouldn't bring him back. And I gotta think of myself.
You're in more danger before you talk than you'd be afterwards. The whole idea is to keep you from talking.
Huh? Sure, there's sense in that, all right.
Somebody shot at you out there on the docks, tried to kill you. You'll never be safe as long as they're running loose. Well, Mr. Hawkins?
The Molly Kay was sunk deliberate. We're sure of that. All of us that was aboard her, things just wasn't right even before it happened.
What things?
Well, that fire, for one, 10 days ago, the first time we started out for Yokohama. Bill Mack was the one that discovered it.
Did Mack think the fire had been set?
That he did. He told the captain that. And you know what happened, Mr. Dollar?
What happened?
Captain Brawley knocked him down the bridge ladder. Told him to keep his mouth shut and not go around spreading wild rumors.
All right. The second time you sailed, what happened?
Well, Soon as we cleared the gate and headed out to sea, Bill and me was on watch. He had me cover for him while he sneaked down in the hold to see what he could find out. He still hadn't come back when it happened. I think you was right, Mr. Dollar, what you said at the hearing.
What do you mean?
We didn't hit no derelict. An explosion, that's what it was. In the bottom of the forward hold somewheres. I was on the bow deck right above it when it happened.
What about that Chinese steward? The one who got ashore and then disappeared. Did you notice anything special about him?
Benny Wong?
Yeah.
No. We was only a couple of hours out of port. I don't even remember seeing him. One thing, though, that seemed kind of funny at the time.
What was that?
The first mate done all the hiring for this trip, same as always, just one exception. Benny Wong was hired on by Captain Brawley himself.
Uh-huh.
And something else, Mr. Dollar, about Bill Mack being drowned. You was wrong about that.
Bill Mack is alive?
No, he was dead before the Molly Kay ever sunk.
What?
I went looking for him as soon as it happened, and I found him down on the lower boat deck, lying in a pool of blood. Somebody'd cut his throat. I'll have another drink now.
I sat there looking at him across the table, not saying anything. There was nothing I could say. Bill Mack had been his friend. I thought over what he just told me, tried to fit it in with what I already knew. It didn't add up to an answer yet. Not quite. But it was close. And it was getting closer all the time.
Mr. Dollar, it's him.
Huh?
Captain Brawley over there. He just come in.
Yeah, he's seen us, too.
He's coming over this way. I gotta get out of here.
Sit down, Mr. Hawkins. He won't start anything.
You don't know him. You don't know how he is when he gets mad.
No, but it looks like I'm gonna find out.
Well, Hawkins, seems like you're not very particular about the company you keep.
Neither am I, Captain. Pull up a chair.
What are you up to, Dollar? Offering him a bribe to testify against me?
Don't need to. There's enough against you already.
Yeah, there will be, more than likely, when you and them smart company lawyers get through. You insurance people are all alike. You're right there to collect when it's due you, but you squirm when it comes to paying off.
Well, now, that depends on the circumstances, Captain, and in this case, well, I wouldn't go spending that money yet if I were you.
That's what you've been telling them, huh?
When I've got anything to tell, I'll tell it to the court.
Yeah, along with anybody else you can turn against me. Like my own daughter, for instance. She even sneaked around and tried to turn her against me. Not that that took much doing. And Dean Sutton, owner of the cargo. But there's a limit to what a man will take, Dollar. And I took enough already. Now you better quit pushing me. I'm warning you.
Are you? We'll take your warning and stick it where it'll do the most good. You've been trying to block every attempt I've made to get to the bottom of this thing. You've dragged your feet every step of the way deliberately.
Dollar, nobody talks to me like that.
Then it's time somebody did. I think you're in this thing right up to your big fat neck. And if you are, I'm going to pin it on you. Not just for swindling. If you were behind the sinking of the Molly Kay, I'm going to see to it that you stand trial for murder, too.
I warned you once.
Look out, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, no. All right, Captain. Learn it the hard way.
Watch out, he's grabbing the bottle.
No. Come and get it, Dollar!
Sorry, the party's over right now. You better get out of here, Hawkins. He's not going to feel very friendly when he comes to.
You're the only man I ever seen stand up to him, Mr. Dollar.
There was one other one, Bill Mack. I left Captain Brawley lying there on the floor. They were throwing water on him when I walked out. I hadn't wanted the fight, but there'd been no choice. And it had given me one new fact to fit in. The captain's coat fell open when he hit the floor. And I saw he was packing a gun. Expense account, item 6, 80 cents. A taxi fare to Chinatown and a rendezvous with Lu Tang. Shanghai Lu. A strange woman, this one. Wise, shrewd, and alert. Hard and tough when she feels that way. Soft as a kitten when she feels that way. Her nationality, history, age, nothing certain about any of that. But there's one thing that is certain. She's the most beautiful woman I've ever known.
It is good to see you, Johnny. How long has it been?
Last year, Lou, in Paris. How could you forget?
I didn't forget. I only wanted to see if you had. Kiss me, Johnny.
I came here to talk business.
Oh, business. I don't feel like talking business.
Simmer down, baby.
Let's get married.
All right. First,
when?
Let's... Tomorrow. Now, if
you... Why not tonight?
It's too late. We'd have to wake somebody up.
Always problems, reasons. I don't think you even want to marry me.
Sure I do. I've been mad, too, for years.
Then why didn't you in Paris?
Lou, it's no time to go into that again. Look, I'm on a case, a rough one. And it's just possible that you may be mixed up in it.
Johnny, I did not sink the Molly case, so there you are. That takes care of the business. Let's get married.
Will you sit back down there? That does not take care of the business.
What more do you want to know?
Several things. Benny Wong, for instance.
That man you asked me about?
Yeah, they said he went down with the Molly Kay, but I found out different from one of the crew.
I have not found Benny yet, but I have people looking, so why don't you and I...
Lou, I've known you too long. You're not fooling me.
Fooling you?
The patter is good, but it's not covering the fact that you're bothered.
You've always bothered me, Johnny.
That's not it. How do you figure in this thing, Lou?
I don't really know what you mean by this thing, Johnny.
You had a pretty heavy stake in the Molly Kay. $100,000 mortgage loaned to Captain Brawley.
A sound business deal, that's all. I have investments in many ships that sail out of San Francisco.
Ah, and of course the investment was covered by insurance.
Naturally. I made sure of that before I advanced the loan. Don't let the soft brown eyes fool you, Johnny. I'm a hard-headed businesswoman.
Yeah, I know.
It was a business deal, nothing else. Showed every chance of being a profitable voyage. He was carrying a cargo of wheat. The Tokyo grain market has been advancing steadily for 3 months. As to what happened, I don't know anything about it. I don't understand it. That's straight, Johnny. That's all I know.
What about this fellow, Dean Sutton? Do you know him, Lou?
I've met him. I understand he's engaged to Captain Brawley's daughter, but beyond the... Pardon me a moment. I'll see who it is.
The visitor was a young Chinese lad. She stepped outside to talk to him, and I lit a cigarette and waited for her. I thought over what she'd said, tried to see behind it, and to decide whether to believe it or not. Lu Tang was not a person you could push. I stood up when she came back into the room.
You're not leaving, Johnny.
Yeah, I think I'd better.
But you'll see me tomorrow?
You know I will.
What if I were mixed up in this? Would you send me to jail?
You know the answer.
Yes. And you're the only man I know who would.
I'd be gentle about it, though.
I think you really would. You're sweet, Johnny. Awfully sweet.
I'm a doll.
I've made up my mind to take no part in this, to stay completely out of it. But I'm going to tell you something.
What do you mean?
That man who just came to the door. I've had him out looking for Benny Wong.
Has he found him?
Not yet. But he's found out something about him. Johnny, if the Molly Kay was sunk on purpose, how do you think it was done?
By an explosion in the bottom of the fort hold.
Benny Wong was a demolition sergeant during World War II. He's rather well known as an expert on explosives.
Now, here's our star, Bob Bailey, to tell you about tomorrow's episode of this story.
Thanks. Tomorrow night, a double cross, a double play, and a lovely girl forces the jealous sea to give up its dead. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
That was the Molly Kay matter from yours truly, Johnny Dollar. That was the third episode of the five-part quarter-hour dailies that they played in 1955. For the middle portion of this program, we're going to listen to The Sounds of War in remembrance of Veterans Day. This is episode 18, VJ Day, the end of the war. There's no real known air date for the Sounds of War series. It was written and produced by Bud Greenspan and narrated by his brother David, aka David Perry. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
Broadcasting Company brings you The Sound of War, the actual sound record of World War II, 2,191 days from the time Hitler's Panzer divisions moved across the Polish borders to the ceremony of the Japanese surrender aboard the United States battleship Missouri in Tokyo Bay. World War II, the most terrible period of death and destruction in the long history of man. World War II, a drama preserved for all time through the medium of radio, an era never to be forgotten. Tonight, VJ Day, the end of the war.
Yesterday morning, 2:41 a.m. at General Eisenhower's headquarters, General Jodl signed the act of unconditional surrender of all German land, sea, and air forces in Europe.
It is May 8, 1945,
expeditionary
and for the first time in more than 5 years, there is peace in Europe.
To the Soviet
the war in the West is over. Prime Minister Winston Churchill speaks to the British nation and the world.
But let us not forget for a moment the toils and efforts that lie ahead. Japan, with all her treachery and greed, remains unsubdued. Advance Britannia! Long live the cause of freedom! God save the King!
Now the attention of the world is focused toward the Pacific theater of operations. A brief recapitulation of the events. United States Marines landed on Iwo Jima. The island is 8 miles square with no vegetation. Its landing beaches are covered with volcanic ash, rocks, and boulders. The island is ugly and treacherous. It is also only 750 miles from Tokyo. Marine Commander General Holland Smith said during the battle, "The fight was the toughest the Marines have had to face in 168 years. On February 23, 1945, a Marine patrol pushed to the topmost ridge of Mount Suribachi, the key to the southern end of the island. Associated Press photographer Joe Rosenthal was there to snap the photograph of the flag-raising ceremony that turned out to be the most famous photograph of the war. Equally fantastic was the coincidence that saw Secretary of the Navy James Forrestal able to give an eyewitness account of the scene. He, too, was there at ugly Iwo Jima.
Up the precipitous side of a 600-foot extinct volcano, so precipitous that it seemed almost vertical, went a platoon of American Marines. Even through a glass, they seemed tiny figures scrambling skyward against a background of blue. And then a few minutes later, from the thousands of throats upon ships and on land and sea, came the sudden cry, "There goes the flag." That was how the Stars and Stripes went up on the first island of Japan's outer rim of island defenses. It was at 11 o'clock, Friday, February 23rd, 9 o'clock Thursday night, New York. We saw that flag going up halfway on the journey to shore with Lieutenant General Holland Smith of the United States Marines. It was the high point in a week of hard fighting. Fighting which continues and will continue for some days to come.
On May 8th, in the French city of Reims, the surrender ceremony in Europe took place. Here is an eyewitness to the signing of the end of hostilities. Made a victory announcement.
I only wish that Franklin D. Roosevelt had lived to witness this day. The flags of freedom fly all over Europe.
The war in the Pacific is still on. The Marines who landed on Okinawa on April 1st were now securing the island. The report did not come from an American source.
Radio Tokyo admits the battle for Okinawa is virtually over and warns the Japanese people that invasion of the home islands is imminent.
Spring and summer came and went. The fighting in Okinawa went on. The bombing of Tokyo and Nagoya were almost a daily occurrence. By the end of July 1945, nearly 100 Japanese cities had tasted the might of the United States bombing forces. Only four major Japanese cities remained undamaged. Their names: Kyoto, Sapporo, Hiroshima, and Nagasaki. It is August 6th, 1945. On Tinian in the Marianas, a B-29 bomber makes ready to take off. It is called the Enola Gay. Piloting the Enola Gay is Colonel Paul Tibbetts. He is a man of many firsts. He piloted the first bomber to cross the English Channel and bomb occupied France. He led the first formation to bomb North Africa. He would now have another first. He would be the first man to pilot a plane that would revolutionize modern warfare. In his plane was the first atom bomb. Destination: Hiroshima.
Delaying the start of our scheduled program to bring you the latest direct report on the atomic bomb attack on Japan. CBS World News takes you now to Guam. Webley Edwards reporting.
The men who have applied the greatest weapon ever developed, the atomic bomb, are close-mouthed, serious, and highly impressed with the world-shaking magnitude of what they've done. We talked with Colonel Paul W. Tibbetts, Jr. of Miami, Florida, pilot of the B-29 that dropped the first atomic bomb in history. We asked him how he'd felt about it, and he said he didn't feel anything much. But you knew from talking to him that he sensed the meaning of that bomb's away. The explosion was a big ball of fire. Anyone not having dark glasses would have received a visual shock several miles away. One of the crew members said, "My God," when he saw what had happened. What had been Hiroshima was a white mountain of smoke, and when we saw it first, it was already up to 25,000 feet. About 1,000 feet off the ground, it looked like boiling dust. It extended over most of the city, churning down there. And the center of the impact was in the center of the city. And the boiling continued several minutes as we watched. Then the mushroom of smoke broke off, and another developed below it. This one bomb is the equivalent of a 2,000 B-29 raid. This is Webley Edwards at Guam. I return you to New York.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base. We won the race of discovery against the Germans. We have used it in order to shorten the agony of war, in order to save the lives of thousands and thousands of young Americans. We shall continue to use it until we completely destroy Japan's power to make war.
Days later, the Soviet Union entered the war against Japan.
British Prime Minister Attlee, a few minutes ago, issued a statement welcoming Russia's entry into the war. He said, "We in Great Britain have fully appreciated and understood the tremendous sacrifice and strain imposed on Russia by her heroic campaign against Nazi Germany, and we've always had confidence that as soon as victory had been won in the West, Russia would take her stand with her allies against the enemy on the Eastern Front. The unconditional surrender of Germany has now made possible the deployment of forces of the USSR against the last of the aggressors. The declaration of war made today by Russia against Japan is a proof of a solidarity that exists between the principal allies and should shorten the struggle and establish conditions which will allow general peace to come about. We welcome this great decision of Soviet Russia. Now, that was what was said today by Prime Minister Attlee. And now, for further British reaction to that momentous news, we take you now to London. Edward R. Murrow reporting.
This is London. As you just heard, Mr. Attlee has welcomed Russia's entry into the war. But shortly after the Moscow radio had announced war against Japan, a friend of mine called the British Foreign Office, and the reply he got was, Molotov hasn't told us about it, but we have no reason to doubt that it's happened. The announcement has caused very little excitement here in London. Russia becomes the first nation to enter the Pacific War without being attacked. It is presumed here that she has done so for reasons which have traditionally caused nations to declare war: the defense or furtherance of her national interests. But the best opinion here seems to be that Russia would not have entered the war at this stage had she not had reason to believe that the war in the East was nearing its end. There is no disposition here to discount the weight of Russian military strength and a growing appreciation of what is called the realism of Russian policy. An acknowledgement that Russia has immediate and long-range interests in China. This declaration of war will be regarded as a move to protect, ensure, and perhaps expand them. For the past few weeks, the Russians have had the diplomatic initiative in dealing with China. I do not mean to imply that the Russian declaration has been greeted with cynicism or anything approaching reluctance or exaggerated suspicion. But there has been no evidence of great popular relief or enthusiasm. That may be because most people are still numb with apprehension, trying to absorb the full implications of the atomic bomb. The succession of events, diplomatic, scientific, and military, have simply left people groggy. In the pubs, there were a few toasts drunk to good old Uncle Joe, and people sort of vaguely realized that already this week, humans had demonstrated that they have the power to destroy humanity, and the whole pattern of power in Asia is changing.
Next day, the Japanese city of Nagasaki received an atom bomb attack. An ironic note, the bomb used in the attack against Nagasaki had been so improved. The bomb used against Hiroshima just 3 days before was already obsolete. After Hiroshima, the Japanese high command had ignored an ultimatum to surrender. Now every day that went by could mean the obliteration of another Japanese city and hundreds and thousands of deaths and permanent injury. August 10th, August 11th. No further atomic attacks. No word of Japanese surrender. It is August 12th, 1945. And now more rumors, finally exultation and disappointment.
In Columbia's newsroom in New York, we have a flash on the United Press wire. President Truman has just announced that Japan has accepted the surrender terms of the Allies.
Well, we'll give you some of those details a little bit later, but I want you to hear these bells. Another flash is coming in on the normal United Press wire now. Listen.
Is a flash, and this is exactly what it says. This is the regular United Press machine. It says flash. Editors, hold up that flash. And the time on this one at the end is printed 9:36. 9:36. In other words, 3 minutes after the original flash on the United Press radio wire comes a flash on the regular United Press service, which says flash. Editors, hold up that flash. The time, 3 minutes later, 9:36 p.m. Eastern Wartime. Listen how quiet it is in our newsroom. I wonder if you can appreciate the contrast. Not a machine is working. They're all ominously quiet. They're waiting for further details.
The flash was premature. August 13th. Still no atomic attack. Still no official surrender. It is August 14th.
NBC has interrupted this program to bring you a special bulletin from the Associated Press. Washington. Secretary of the Navy Forrestal
left a conference with President Truman this morning to say that he hopes the surrender of Japan is an actuality and that he fully expects a development in that respect within 25 or 30 minutes. I shall repeat that. Secretary Forrestal, Secretary of the Navy Forrestal, left a conference with President Truman this morning to say that he hopes the surrender of Japan is an actuality and that he fully expects a development in that respect within 25 or 30 minutes.
Throughout the day, reports came from all over the world. It is now 7 p.m., August 14th, 1945.
Bob Trout speaking. This is the supreme hour, 7 o'clock Eastern wartime. The correspondents of the White House have entered President Truman's office. The Prime Minister of Great Britain is about to begin his broadcast. The Japanese have accepted our terms fully. That is the word we have just received from the White House in Washington. And I didn't expect to hear a celebration here in our newsroom in New York, but you can hear one going on behind me. The Japanese have accepted fully the surrender terms of the United Nations. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of the Second World War. It is not, of course, the official VJ Day, but the United Nations on land, on sea, on air, to the four corners of the earth and the seven seas are united and are victorious. Flash on the INS, or is it UP? MacArthur appointed Jap boss. Flash, MacArthur appointed Jap boss.
It is Sunday, September 2nd, 1945. 3 years, 8 months, 25 days since the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. The place, Tokyo Bay, aboard the battleship Missouri. The situation, the signing of the surrender documents by the Japanese. From the foremast of the Missouri flew the same flag that flew atop the Capitol in Washington on December 7th, 1941. 9 members of the Japanese delegation were on board the Missouri. 3 in formal clothes with top hats. 6 in military uniforms. General Douglas MacArthur, Supreme Commander, Allied Forces Pacific Theater, opened the ceremonies.
We are gathered here, representatives of the major warring powers, to conclude a solemn agreement whereby peace may be restored. As Supreme Commander for the Allied Powers, I announce it my firm purpose, in the tradition of the countries I represent, to proceed in the discharge of my responsibilities with justice and tolerance while taking all necessary dispositions to ensure that the terms of surrender are fully, promptly, and faithfully complied with. I now invite the representatives of the Emperor of Japan and the Japanese government and the Japanese Imperial General Headquarters to sign the instrument of surrender at the places indicated.
Now a dramatic moment. 2 gaunt heroes of early Allied defeats. Lieutenant General Jonathan Wainwright, defender of Bataan and Corregidor, and Lieutenant General Arthur Percival, the British commander of Singapore.
The Supreme Commander for the Allied Powers will now sign on behalf of all the nations at war with Japan. Will General Wainwright and General Percival step forward and accompany me while I sign? Let us pray that peace be now restored to the world and that God will preserve it always.
if there is an epitaph for those who died and a prologue for those not yet born. It was spoken on July 16, 1945, when the first atom bomb was exploded on a New Mexico desert. Describing the scene, one observer said, "The blast was followed almost immediately by the strong, sustained, almost awesome roar, which warned of doomsday and made us feel that perhaps we puny things were blasphemous to dare tamper with the forces heretofore reserved to the Almighty God."
These proceedings are closed.
Westinghouse Broadcasting Company has brought you VJ Day, the end of the war. The voices and sounds of the most dramatic and tragic period of our time. This program was written, produced, and directed by Bud Greenspan. My name is David Perry.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry, for that FCC obligation. Prior to that was episode 18, The Sounds of War, VJ Day, The End of the War. That was in reference to World War II. Veterans Day came about after Armistice Day, the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. But unfortunately for radio, it hadn't evolved to the point where it was a household commodity. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. We just played tribute to the veterans, so we're going to go ahead and continue with episode 4 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is technically episode 239, The Molly K Matter, with an original air date of the 13th of October, 1955.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
Hi, Johnny. Dan McKay, Harbor Police.
Dan, I was planning to drop by and see you about the sinking of the Molly Kay, but I've been pretty busy since I got here.
Yeah, so I've heard. Johnny, you're under arrest.
What did I do, park in a red zone, walk in the grass?
I'm not kidding, I mean it.
Well, what's the charge?
Now, let's see, assault and battery, aggravated assault, assault with intent to do bodily injury...
Hold it, Dan, that's enough.
But you want to know who signed it?
I already know.
That's practically an admission of guilt, you know that.
But I've got witnesses.
So is he.
Huh?
I think you'd better come down and talk about it.
Or you'll send out the wagon, is that it?
I'm serious, Johnny.
All right, Dan, I'll be down.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Uh-huh.
From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location San Francisco, to the Home Office Marine and Maritime Casualty Limited, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Molly K matter. Expense account continued. Item 7, a mere 60 cents. Taxi from my hotel to the foot of Market Street and headquarters of Inspector Dan McKay in charge of Harbor Police. I'd known Dan for years, well enough to realize that knowing him wouldn't make any difference. Not when he had a warrant to serve. I knew the charge wouldn't stick, of course, but it could slow me down. And I figured that was exactly why it had been filed.
You may be right, Johnny. Maybe Captain Brawley did file charges just for nuisance value. Keep you out of his way for a day or two.
That's exactly what he did.
Nevertheless, the charge was filed, and a warrant has been issued. So what are you going to do about it?
I know what I'd like to do about it.
Uh-uh. That's against the law, too. You know, you could be wrong, Johnny. Brawley may not be guilty of the Molly case sinking.
I told you the whole story, Dan. The facts add up. What do you think?
I think you've got an awful strong case, but it's still based on circumstantial evidence.
Well, what else is there to base it on? The rest of the evidence is out past the harbor there, out beyond the Golden Gate, a mile below the surface of the Pacific.
Yeah, I know. Most of the cases we handle here in the Harbor Division are like that.
Well, then you can see the problem I'm up against.
Yeah, I can see it all right. That's a big harbor out there, Johnny. Biggest natural harbor in the world. A lot of square miles of water. A lot of miles of shoreline.
And a lot of ways of covering up a crime.
As far as disposing of physical evidence, it's true. Body can be thrown into the bay, a weapon, so on. Sometimes we recover it, sometimes we don't. It's tough, Johnny.
Yeah, I imagine.
Real tough. Hey, that's the SS Maritonia, arriving from Ceylon, Java, the Philippines. She'll dock at Pier 14. The cargo is probably spices, mahogany, raw ore.
Nice-looking ship.
Beautiful. They drive me crazy, Johnny, watching them here from the window. I should have gone to sea. Oh, well. Anyway, since we don't have physical evidence in a lot of cases, we've learned to rely on other things.
Such as?
The human elements, Johnny. You've turned up a lot of facts, true. You've made a good deal more progress on this case than I have.
Than you have? What do you mean?
Tim O'Rourke sent me the report of the inquiry board. I've been working on the case ever since. Now, you got a pretty convincing bunch of facts. But I know Captain Brawley. By reputation, at least.
Look, Dan, I know what you're getting at. People who know Brawley think he's honest. O'Rourke said the same thing.
Right. Tough, hard, violent temper, a slave driver, but not a crook.
An honest man can get under pressure sometimes, get pushed beyond his depth. It happens every day.
Yeah, but Johnny, even then, he reacts according to his pattern. Here's what I'm getting at. That murder on board the Molly K just before she sank, you said Hawkins told you the man had been knifed. Now, I can see Brawley slugging somebody with fist, club, or bottle, or even shooting a man. But not a knife. It's not in his nature. That's what I mean by human elements.
And you're right, Dan. I agree with you. I don't think it was Brawley who killed him. Here's the way I see it. Brawley was pressed for cash. The mortgage on his ship was due in 30 days. He was carrying that grain for Dean Sutton on a contingency basis. He might not make any money, or at least not enough. He was probably doing it as a favor to his daughter. She and Dean Sutton are engaged.
Yeah, I know,
Charlie. So the first time out, he tried setting that fire on board. It didn't work. One of the crew, Bill Mack, discovered it before it got started. The Molly K returned to port, and Brawley filed an insurance claim. Then he got scared off an investigation and withdrew it.
That's all guesswork, Johnny.
So far, his second attempt, he contacted an expert on explosives, Benny Wong. And Benny pulled off the job for him, blew the bottom out of the ship and sank it.
And what about the knifing?
Well, Bill Mack was suspicious. He was prowling around the hold and caught Benny in the act of setting the explosive. Benny killed him, figuring the sinking would cover for him. But by accident, Hawkins stumbled onto the body before the ship went down.
What? That adds up, Johnny. It's hard to argue with you. I just can't see a captain sinking his own ship.
It's been done before.
Yeah, I know.
Not everybody feels about them the way you do, Dan. And a $500,000 is a lot of money.
That's true. But 25 years of command means a lot, too. Deep sense of responsibility. Integrity. Oh, pardon me. Inspector McKay. Oh, yeah. Just a moment. It's for you, Johnny.
It was Lu Tang, Shanghai Lu. She'd called the hotel and found out where to reach me. For once, she didn't try to play games. She spoke briefly and straight to the point. And she told me what I wanted to know the most. When I hung up, I knew I was on the last lap. I had the case right in my hand.
Well, what's up, Johnny? What is it?
Dan, how would you like to come along and talk to the man who blew up the Molly K? Item 8, 80 cents. Another taxi. A short run from the foot of Market to Fisherman's Wharf. Lu Tang's spies had told her Benny Wong was holed up in a back room of the Fa Song Fish Company out on the docks. And they said he was scared, armed, and dangerous.
There's the Fa Song layout, Johnny. Right there, the warehouse in the end.
Yeah. Well, let's go around the gangway. Lu Tang said the room was on the back corner.
Say, Johnny, why don't you wait here? Let me take him. This kind of thing is part of my job.
But he's my pigeon, Dan. I found him first. There's a door at the back. That must be it.
Yeah, only one it could be.
Besides, I'm under arrest. If you left me alone, I might escape.
Yeah, sure. You got a gun, Johnny?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go.
We moved quietly up to the blank wooden door opening onto the gangway over the water. There were no windows in the back wall, so we were certain we weren't being watched from inside. We stopped at the door, and McKay reached for the knob and tried it gently.
It's unlocked.
Good.
You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, what...
Hold it, police officers!
Drop that gun.
Drop it, fast!
This doesn't look much like Benny Wong, Johnny.
No, it doesn't.
Now, look here.
What do you do, Dean? Go around with a gun in your hand all the time?
You're making a mistake, Dollar. I don't know any more about this than you do.
Any more about what? What are you doing here,
Never
Dean?
Never mind, Johnny. Here's what he means.
Huh? Oh. Well. So we don't talk to Benny.
Shot 3 times.
Yeah.
Any one of the bullets would have done the job.
You weren't taking any chances, were you, Dean?
I didn't shoot him. I just got here.
How did you know where he was hiding?
I didn't. I didn't know anything about him. I got a phone call. Somebody said to meet them here. Said they'd give me the lowdown on the sinking of the Molly K.
What somebody? Who was it?
I don't know.
Man or woman?
Man, I think. Voice was muffled, so I came here to meet them.
And we find you standing over a dead man with a gun in your hand.
I found him like that. I figured it was a trap. I don't know anything about it.
Oh, no, of course you don't. You're just a babe in the woods.
Hold it, Johnny. Barking up a wrong tree.
What do you mean?
This man's been dead for several hours. Since early morning, I'd say. And he was shot with a .45. This gun of Sutton's is a .32.
So that's that.
Johnny, what was the caliber of the gun you saw Captain Brawley wearing?
A .45, Dan.
I'll put out a bulletin and we'll pick him up.
Wind up. The bets were all in. There was nothing more ahead but the showdown. Dan tore up the warrant on me, of course, and I went back to my hotel room to wait it out. That seemed the safest place to be. Brawley would be desperate now, half out of his mind. And of all the people he hated most, I was number one. So I lay back on my bed and waited. I reached my gun from the lamp table, moved quietly over to the door, and took hold of the key. Who is it?
Let me in, Johnny.
Ellen. Just a second. Come on in.
Has he been here, Johnny?
Has who been here?
My father.
The last time I saw the captain, he was lying unconscious on a barroom floor. I just put him there. That was last night.
Yes, I know.
Well, what made you think he'd be here?
I don't know. Guess I thought... I don't know what I thought.
Oh, easy now, honey.
I'm scared, Johnny. Hold me, please. I'm so lonely and scared.
It's all right, Ellen. Easy now.
He came home last night after he fought with you. He was furious. Then he left again, and I haven't seen him since.
Does he have his gun with him?
I guess so. I don't know. I don't know anything. Help me, Johnny, won't you?
Of course I will.
Hold me tight. Kiss me.
Ellen,
last
honey,
night,
but...
when you kissed me, I wasn't scared then. I was lonely.
Look, honey, would you...
Hold me, Johnny.
Wait a second. Johnny Dollar.
Dan McKay, Johnny.
Yeah, Dan.
We picked up Raleigh on the waterfront a half an hour ago. Thought you'd want to know.
What's he say?
Denies everything. Says he was home asleep all night. Says his daughter will back him up.
Uh-uh. I happen to know different on that.
Yeah, I figured he was lying. We'd already been out to his house. Found his gun. It's been fired 3 times, Johnny. And the bullets match.
When Ellen Brawley left my room a while later, I still hadn't told her about her father's arrest. I didn't have the heart. She'd tried her best to protect him, cover for him. She'd have done anything to save him. And yet, the irony was that every move she'd made helped tighten the case against him. The scent of her perfume still hung in the air after she'd gone. It was a strange scent, subtle, disturbing. I began to feel uncomfortable, on edge. There was something familiar about that scent. And finally I tagged it. I'd noticed that same perfume in the room on the wharf where Benny Wong lay murdered.
Now, here's our star, Bob Bailey, to tell you about tomorrow's episode of this story.
Thanks. Tomorrow night, a deadly rendezvous on the fog-shrouded waterfront, and an explosion that rocked the city. The payoff. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
That was episode 239. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the Molly K. Matter, with an original air date of the 13th of October, 1955. Prior to that, and in the middle of the show, we played episode 18 of The Sounds of War in tribute to Veterans Day, VJ Day, the end of war. Happy Veterans Day. Next week, I'll come back and play the conclusion of the Molly K. Matter. I believe Matt will be up at 8 o'clock if he's around. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio.
Happy Veterans Day, everybody. This show is pre-recorded.